following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang. It is that time of the weekend, and it's time for the True Wealth Radio Show on this, the greatest Tuesday I've had all week, and also Cinco de Mayo, ay, 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 which makes it super awesome Taco Tuesday. Welcome, everybody. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon. Hey, but, are we going to go get tacos after this?
God, you know, I feel like it's almost a moral obligation.
I feel like we should have a taco eating contest. Okay. Now, I think you'll probably always beat me by like one or two tacos, but I'll give you a good fight.
I feel like this is a worthy contest here. I'm like, I'm in it.
Should
by
we do
the
it?
Way, I also need to. So Emma's got the mic today too. She's no. here.
Hi.
You know what? No. Kick her out of the studio because
no.
Send her on a mission. Go get us 20 tacos. And
no, that's what DoorDash is for. Come on.
We're live streaming this. We could be eating the tacos on air. People would love it.
Yes, we are live. We're not live streaming. This will show up on YouTube. We've had enough technical issues. We're done with that part. We're just going to capture it. And you know what? You can see it on YouTube later. Go subscribe, and then we'll get noticed every time the new video shows up.
What's that genre called where people like to watch other people eat? Is it ASMR? Is that what it is?
Mukbangs, I think, right?
Yeah. And
they eat a lot of food all at one time.
Oh, yeah. People love watching
I know
people
that there's,
eat.
Like, contests where people just eat massive amounts of food.
Yeah.
And you're like, what is going on here?
David?
Have you?
No one has probably tapped that side of the market. Everyone talks about finances, but how many people talk about finances and eat, like, 30 tacos at a time?
I don't know.
We've got this pinned.
Yeah.
This is our call to fame. We're just going to eat tacos.
I'm over here panicking a little on the inside. I'm like, I'm very capable of eating more calories than I can burn. And storing said calories. I was like, look, it's compound calorie storage. Like, that's not good.
You just need to have a celery eating contest.
Oh, that sounds brutal. I'd be like one stick in and out.
Hey, now,
if you eat celery without peanut butter, you're weird. Like, I'll go on record and say it. Like,
celery with cream cheese was always good. So, now you got me thinking, like, could you possibly make some kind of taco filling with enough celery and stuff in it that you could get the flavor profile out, but you'd end up having neutral calories?
I don't like that you're stepping into that whole vegan thing. So
vegan. I'm like, how many negative calories in celery, and like how much ground beef can go into a taco compared to the celery that goes into it before it's like the ratio is wrong.
Ugh. Just give me all the beef. I want all the beef. Yeah.
What if you like had some kind of like baked cauliflower ground into the meat, so you had a lot more volume, but it was most, you know, like a meat and cauliflower.
I've tried that before, and it's okay, but
yeah, it's just tolerable. It's not great.
It's not good. Like, you don't ever wish that you had more of it.
It's
but
true.
You're like, well, if this is all I had to eat, I guess I could be a vegan.
Well, this is perfectly in line with where we need to head on today's show, which is this idea of when to make compromises and when not to. And honestly, the taco is not the place to compromise.
Never compromise on food. That's the one spot. Like, sometimes the difference between the $2 can of corn and the $1 can of corn, like,
it's a big difference. Yeah.
Well, the price difference, it's hard to say. Like,
you know where hominy.
Huh?
Hominy. The cheap hominy, don't get it. That's the only place I'm going to tell you not to skimp. Like, you got to get the good stuff. The other, the hominy. You're acting like you don't eat this all the time.
I don't.
No?
No.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. We're about to get educated here.
Yeah. So, of all the canned vegetables, hominy is in the top two. Period. Like, it's like corn, but it's like bigger and kind of creamier. Hominy. You got to try it. If you haven't, there's my shameless plug.
How have I had more years? Like, I've had more laps around the sun than you, and I'm
literally hearing about this for the first time. Like, what rock do I live under?
I think it was kind of like an old person food, but like
that doesn't change. I should even be more likely.
But you're older than me, so you should have had.
That's
at least,
what I mean.
Yeah,
I
you should have had at least 100 cans of it in your lifetime.
Which I'm still going. I'm not sure how to spell that. Is the H silent? I mean, like, where is this on this?
Yeah. Wow. That really is mind blowing to me. It goes really good with like fried chicken. All this stuff.
What's that? No, I'm kidding. That's sorry.
I almost fell out of my chair.
Yeah, and the show was over, right? So we have really been all over. There's so many things that are really interesting right now. There's some conspiracy theory. There's some technology breakthrough. And then there was just stuff that comes up that we stumble across in our day-to-day operation that we think, you know, we really got to share this with our listeners. Mm-hmm. And It's not that we're trying to be scatterbrained here. It's that it's hard to narrow it down. I mean, Matt, how do I narrow this down between online auctions, bad financial habits, quantum computing, AI advancements, and the Strait of Hormuz?
Okay.
Like how do we do this?
There's a lot to cover, so let's just jump into it because this is a show about financial stuff. And so I think I think this is all relevant. We're going to loop it together and it's going to seem scattered at first.
Yeah,
but
don't worry. This is the only time you'll hear this show because there'll be so much relevant that we'll never be able to play it as a rerun.
No. Okay.
There you go.
News broke that GameStop offered like $56 billion. To buy eBay today.
Is GameStop the ultimate troll of the stock market?
That's why I wanted to talk about it because I remember when I first started here, GameStop was this.
It was
huge
the
meme
stock, right?
And I mean, everyone was buying it, hold it to the moon, blah 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 blah.
Yes,
and
then, Diamond Hands. Come on.
And then it cratered, and then no one talked about it for years. And now, what does it do? It jumps itself to the top of the news media cycle. And they throw out a $56 billion offer. Now, remember, they're only worth as a company like $12 billion. So they're offering more than four times the value of their own company.
It's a little bit like when your kid says, like, hey, why can't we go buy the moon or something like that?
Yeah. It'd be like your three-year-old saying, I'm going to go buy a brand new $100,000 Super Duty today.
I'm sitting there going, oh,
you don't have any
money.
It's
a million kerbillion dollars. Like, I don't even know what that means.
Yeah. Well, and there's no, like, public knowledge of
Where are they going to come up with the money?
Yeah, there's no banks that have been on record for saying, well, we'll lend it to you.
They've been secretly – I'm going to start a rumor and get in trouble. You know, I want to make a joke about it. Now it's not funny anymore when you have to do a disclosure, though.
Disclosures before jokes are lame.
It's super lame because I'm like, you know, they're running a cryptocurrency racket and they've been printing a bunch of the NFTs and stuff. And, and they're just like spooling out and they've got this whole army of fake people that they've been doing that. And they're like, actually, we're worth $78 billion right now and we're buying eBay.
There's a lot of theories floating around online on how they could actually pull it off, though, right?
Of course there are.
How?
One of the things, first
we, you know, it's a bedtime story, and we make stuff up. I don't know. Like, yeah. All right, go, Matt, go.
There's theories out there, not that any of these are true, but there's theories that they're not actually serious about making that go through. But what they did is they bought a ton of shares of eBay because investors might look at it and be like, oh, eBay's going to get acquired. Let's buy that. So if other people come in and buy it and they bought underlying options on it or they bought actual shares –
so they just...
they might pump it
it's
up.
It's a pump and dump.
It's literally
it's the
like...
biggest pump and dump in history.
Yes. That's theoried. And that they're waiting for like a 6% price move in eBay. And then they're literally just going to dump their shares and be like, yeah, you know what? That offer is not actually going to pan out. And then they made a bunch of money.
Oh, I see.
There's a secondary thought. Now, this one sounds more believable. That somehow the new CEO actually does have a way to come up with the financing. And that his thought is, hey, video games aren't selling in store like they used to. Everything's a digital sale. But you know what we do have? 1,600 storefronts. And if we acquire eBay, people can come in and sell their stuff cheap to us, and then we put it on eBay's website, and we become the secondhand Amazon.
Oh, interesting.
That's not a crazy thought. Right? That eBay basically becomes the place you go where you don't want to have to buy new stuff. You can get it cheap.
And then Amazon buys them.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, I see the game here. Okay,
but
this
wouldn't
is fun.
That be the ultimate heist where you come in and you're just a small fry and you manage to gobble a $56 billion company somehow and then make it even, you know, 10 times more profitable than it was? That would be wild.
Well, assuming that that wild. Actually happens, right?
Right.
That's
yeah,
that's you know, it also
crazy
implies, oh, it has to be successful. When, you know, I'm listening earlier today to the announcement that Amazon is now starting to essentially act as delivery infrastructure for other companies. So they are competing with FedEx and UPS mm-hmm. now.
Yeah. But think about
I'm like,
this.
Do they need the eBay component, or are they also like, well, we may as well because we could do this at, but then what happens to Staples? Because, you know, they're like an Amazon return
right.
center.
Yeah, Staples is kicking themselves because they're like, wow, we had storefronts and we didn't think of this. But, you know, would you ever take the time? Let me ask you, would you ever take the time to take a $40 or $50 item and put it on eBay, and then you have to ship it, and then you have to handle all the stress of it to make $30.
I can't
right?
even get stuff on Facebook Marketplace.
I have. It's a pain.
Exactly.
We have
a
whole
pain.
Collection of American Girl doll stuff
yeah.
that's like in pristine shape. And
it's worth real money.
It actually is. So
yep.
I don't know. If you have a kid that's interested in American Girl stuff, then you should just text our office.
But what if GameStop does buy eBay and then they say, you can bring it in here and we're going to give you 50% of its value. You just got to drop it off. You'd probably do it. You
There's
just walk
chance.
Up to the counter and just hand
yeah.
them the stuff.
GameStop. It's
Think
like,
of the margins.
It's like
Think
a
of the margins
garage
in
sale.
It's 50% more than if you donate it.
Yeah. And I'm looking
yeah.
at this and thinking,
Goodwill,
hey,
you're in trouble.
You could do this and this is where my mind
no.
is on. Think of the money laundering. Golly, IRS, look into this now. Okay, we got – all right, I've let us run long. I shouldn't have, but I did. So,
I got more crazy stuff for you to
okay, well,
chow
save
on.
Them, Matt. Save them for our listeners to come back. I'm not even wearing headphones. I assume the music is on right now. So we're going to grab a break. We'll come back, and we'll talk about more crazy market theories. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And I'm Arndt.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, where we are live on a Taco Tuesday, but also Cinco de Mayo, which you know what that means. Good, because I don't. we're in studio with Matt and Emma, and you can get us caught up on the podcast. It'll be available at littlejohnfs.com tomorrow under the Knowledge Center. Which sounds fancy to me. Knowledge Center. Okay, Matt, have we
yes.
put to bed this rumor about eBay and GameStop and all the shenanigans?
Sure.
Then
we can move on.
What other crazy ideas did you have running around?
I have this crazy idea that people are completely blind to the fact that quantum computing exists. They don't even really know it. And that quantum computing is going to take over in a big way. Like, where it really starts to change how the world works. And it's not that far out. I don't think it's 10 plus years out. I think we're a couple years out from quantum computing becoming a much more large part of how our economy works. I'll put it that way.
Okay. So what do we do with this knowledge?
I think that I want you to talk a little bit about quantum computing. And I'll throw in what I know. And then we're going to speculate how it can change.
This is going to be a fun test. Now, what do you know about quantum computing?
I know that ones and zeros are how a computer reads stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that quantum computing allows it to use ones and zeros simultaneously, so at the same time. And so it changes the way that a computer can operate, and it improves efficiency in a huge, huge way. That's just a small part of it, obviously. But what some tasks a normal computer even with like as many NVIDIA chips as you can, you know, tie together, could take a normal computer a billion years to solve. It could take a quantum computer in theory like a day.
Yes.
And so quantum computing, like the technology in the last, I don't know, 5-6 months has really taken some giant leaps forward. And so I think that we're about to start to see adoption of that technology in different ways. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to start to change, you know, the way that we do business.
Yeah. I'm gonna help Matt out, but I don't know that much more. Right. I know that quantum computing is based on the concepts that are found in quantum physics.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's hence the quantum connection.
Yeah.
And I like to think of this as an oversimplification, but we think of traditional computers as operating in a two-dimensional space. It's like a piece of paper.
Right.
Where quantum computing operates in a three-dimensional space, so it's like a sphere. So we're used to thinking of states as either an off or an on. That's how a computer looks at it. It's like the computers used to be switches, and they were physically off or physically on. And so when you coded things, it was a zero or a one. The switch was yes or the switch was no. It was off or it was on. So that binary code is what we're traditionally used to. And the idea that quantum computing has particles that are in a flexible state. They're not just a zero or a one. They're in a state. And what happens is when you observe them, the state becomes known. But until that point, they can be in multiple states simultaneously. Now, imagine if you're able to take advantage of that simultaneous nature and then apply it to computing something. Normally, you would have to sequence it with zeros and ones on a flat piece of paper, but you're able to put this into a sphere and sort of compute in every direction at the same time. So you're able to process through radical amounts of information.
In like fractions of a
second.
Yeah,
in fractions of what it would take to sequence it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they're starting, first this was sort of experimental and it was hard to even produce. Now we're able to sort of produce quantum computers that do this. And then what they had was, it was so fragile that you'd have gaps in the information, right? Mm-hmm. The data wouldn't be that coherent, so it wasn't super useful. Now even the data is becoming stabilized in such a way that it's not just repairing data by looking at it and seeing where the gaps are and sort of backfilling it, sort of approximating or filling in. They're actually starting to maintain the architecture of the data that's being put out. So its ability to process, and it's not necessarily more useful than traditional computing, but for certain tasks it can be, but it's incredibly powerful and fast.
Yeah.
And so one of the things they're most concerned about is encryption breaking, which would historically be a huge sequencing problem. They're finding that quantum computers can just rip through encryption.
That's
and it's almost useless.
Yeah.
And so it's very destabilizing to the financial system and so forth. So I would suggest that quantum computing is highly relevant and that we need to stay ahead of it. With the white hats need to stay ahead of it, right?
Right. And think of how much money is going to be put at it to try and stay ahead of it.
Yes.
It's nuts because think about it. Like, say you have 1,000 delivery trucks and you have to be able to route them the most efficient way possible all at once. Like, you're just like, route all of these. That could take a computer just a ton of time in order to figure it out. But a quantum computer could figure that out in just a matter of seconds.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, think about AWS, Amazon's delivery stuff.
So you're still thinking about this in sort of physical infrastructure ways, too.
Oh,
it would be very useful to tie together multivariable stuff. I'm just calling it stuff, not because I'm trying to oversimplify it, but because it could be anything, right? It could be
the U.S.
traffic
military.
Networks. Yeah. It could be how your smart routing for the internet, just so that you can preserve bandwidth, so you don't have those, you know, like some afternoons where you go, gosh, how many cell phone towers keep dropping calls? You know, it gets the ability to sort of solve problems in real time more effectively because it can handle the data. But I'm looking at it too from the position of the way artificial intelligence does these sort of node recognition and the way it processes through tokenization. So imagine being able to have a computer that could think all those thoughts at the same time, right? It's not sequencing thoughts. It's able to say, I'm multitasking in my thought process at the same time. That's the step that's really
remarkable.
So it's like
it's able to think on different layers a lot quicker because right now AI is largely a language model, right? It's searching the internet and it's searching articles, and then it's compiling evidence, and you're saying, like, what if it can go through all of those different layers to a different dimension?
Yeah, well, it's even more than that. It searches those things, but remember, it's pattern recognition, and it's looking for the way the different patterns connect to each other. Mm-hmm. That's how the mm-hmm. intelligence nodes work, is it recognizes patterns and it's sub-patterns within those and patterns within those. And so it's actually predicting what the next thing needs to be. Well, imagine being able to run simultaneous processes. Right now, what's interesting in AI is this concept of iteration, right? If we want it to solve a problem, we no longer just ask a question. We ask it to do a task, and it figures out how to do the task, okay? Mm-hmm. Well, what happens when it can, you give it a task to solve, and it can not only solve the task and problem solve, but it can start to creatively think about the things you missed in the process, mm-hmm. and it can do it on multiple levels, and it can do it better than you can. Because it can test all the scenarios, even the irrelevant ones, and decide which ones to discard and which ones to go further down the path on. So this is the idea of how artificial general intelligence could start to become really staggering, is it just has orders of magnitude more processing power than the human brain.
Imagine like code cracking when it comes to DNA structures and stuff. It's yeah, like,
which
oh
is
my
really
gosh.
All mostly unpacked. Like we've unpacked the human genome. Now it's the question of what turns them off and on and how the sequences are activated and so forth. I think that the horizon for medicine is the most exciting it's ever been.
Oh, yeah.
With the ability to bring in artificial intelligence and then quantum computing to sort of sandbox somebody's personal DNA and their personal medical needs, their personal biology, and you know, oh, we found the part that's broken, and we now have the ability to simulate how to fix it. We can pre-test it almost as if you were running it through the kind of like a lab cycle that you would do, like FDA approval for a drug, but it's on a case-by-case basis.
Right.
Like that to me is amazing, that you could get personalized medications manufactured on the spot for just your unique biology.
Yeah.
And it just freaks me out, but in a kind of cool way.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, maybe we could all end up being like Captain America or something.
So it sounds like you largely agree that this stuff is coming and it's going to be
Well, there's real applications. Yeah. It's coming. It's been coming. You know, Google's been a real pioneer in this space. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think we were just saying at the break that Google's now like the largest company mm-hmm. by market cap.
Yeah.
And it's been... But they've been pioneering this space. I've been sort of tracking it for the last 2 or 3 years. And again, I make it sound like I understand this stuff more than I do. It's really a total line of BS. But what it's capable of, when I just start to imagine where it could take us, mm-hmm. oh, man.
Yeah.
That's wild.
It is.
So,
for sure.
So the real question then becomes, you know, what happens when we become the tools for the computer instead of the computer is a tool for us?
It's going to want manual labor. Right, because it's like that's largely a shortcoming. It can do all the thinking, but it can't do the like go sweep the driveway activity nearly as easily. And it can't do it as cheap. So we become the manual labor for the computer. Yeah,
I have this belief that even those things, the computers may ultimately do a lot of that stuff. The question is, as long as we can, or maybe the scenario and the question at the same time.
What if we exist just to generate the energy for AI to run
on? Well, that's the matrix, right? That's the theory of the matrix. Yeah. It's like, we'll just use bioelectricity since, you know, solar was the other one. I think we have to solve a problem with AI.
What's the problem and what is the solve?
I don't have the solve fully. But
I'll give it to you. How about that?
Okay. The problem that I think we need to solve is, how can we make AI follow a form of ethics and morality so that it doesn't hurt people? Because it could do it by accident, mm-hmm. right? Because it has no moral compass, it will just follow instructions. And so we've used this example on this show before, but hey, you know, if we pave a road between here and wherever you're going and there's an anthill in the way, we just go over it.
Mm-hmm.
And AI may do that with people if we can't give it some parameterization to value human life. And yeah, there have been movies about it and everything else. That's real. No, I'm actually not convinced that AI arrives at the point that humans are disposable and useless. If you gave it the ability to think through it, I think humans may be sort of fascinating because I don't know how AI develops the personality to appreciate things like art. It's pragmatic by default, where humans are not necessarily pragmatic, which may make us really interesting as sort of co-hosts or maybe really fancy pets for AI. I don't know. But yeah. I mean, like, sounds weird, but maybe so.
AI takes you for a walk. Here's the leash, son.
Well, I mean, if it's saying, like, you need to go for a walk because your A1C is too high, well, what's the difference?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we're already, the crazy thing is I think we're already knocking on the door. I think we're at the footstep of it already right now.
Yeah. Well, the really wild part to me is how many people, I mean, there's a bunch of people listening to the show because we're Americans, right? And like, nobody tells me what to do. But that say that never happened. There's a bunch of people that would sign up for it without realizing they were even signing up for it.
How much have we already like turned off our brain and just asked AI, okay, what do I do next? We're not like doing the critical thinking that we used to, and we're only, what, a year into this thing?
Yeah.
We're already there. We're already turning off the critical thinking part of our brains.
We'll
and that's why
we'll
the show
see.
Might sound so scattered, because we didn't use AI to create it.
That's true. No AI was used in the preparation of today's show.
Nope.
So
just Matt's scattered brain and Dave saying, okay, crazy guy, let's do this.
This is a contest, by the way, where they'll say, you know what? I'm just going to throw crazy questions at you and see how you do.
Mm.
I should do this to Matt, shouldn't we?
You should have AI create all the crazy questions.
There we go. All right, look, we're going to take a break. We got to do that because we're running a tad long again. So we'll do that when we'll come back. More from the fascinating, and we'll just call it
terrifying,
fascinating mind of Matthew
terrifying.
Dixon. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And I'm Art.
And you got True Well on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Okay.
There's a whole theory I have on that one.
There we go. Well,
you're
welcome back.
Catch it after the show.
Yep. Welcome back to the True Well Show, where Matt has been.
I'm swimming in the deep end of the pool.
He is in the deep end of the pool.
I don't even have my floaties.
That, hence swimming, right? Not floating in the deep end of the pool. Okay. Well, we've covered a lot. Where are we going next? Matt's been inventing this. Or Emma, based on the last segment of the show here, you kind of remarked during the break that you hadn't really thought about some of the application here. Do you think that anything else would apply? What did we miss?
Oh, I mean, I don't even know. That's the wild part. It's like I actually studied quantum mechanics in college.
Yeah.
But it was all just like theoretical because you can't test it super well. And yeah, like the instantaneous like information passing is incredible. But I hadn't even really like revisited since AI has been such a big thing and now it's like widespread and it's available to everyone. The implications that quantum mechanics and quantum computing would have now that,
you know,
like we've made AI so accessible. I haven't really thought about it that much, but I have seen that, like you mentioned in the like in biology fields, they are doing a lot of stuff like with AI that quantum computing is going to be really helpful with, like with the personalized medicine and stuff like that. But also, like, you can take a scan and like, let's say there's like tumors or something. There's a company that will go and 3D print out those tumors so that your doctor can perform the surgery on a replica first. And then you go get the surgery.
Let them practice before they have.
But it's like extremely accurate.
Imagine this. They do that process, but then they feed the coordinates into a robotic surgeon
and
that
then
can do
knows
it with more precision than a human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's sort of what's on the horizon. There's a part of me that I don't even know how to answer this, but, you know, what's it look like with AI? You know, what jobs are gone, but what jobs show up because of AI? So I don't actually think work goes away with AI. Like, I really don't. Like, people thought that was going to happen with the internet. Like, oh, you know, we're going to have a bunch of, you know, jobs lost.
Well,
we didn't. We have more jobs than ever.
Yeah. See, and Matt said, he was like, you don't even have to think anymore. I use AI all the time with our position, and I feel like I have to think way harder.
Oh yeah.
Because like if it's an easy job, if it's an easier thing to do, mm-hmm. might as well have AI do it and get it out faster. And you're having to do a lot more critical thinking to manage around
yeah.
the rest of the tasks, and a lot faster because work is going faster.
It does.
So I think it's really picked up the pace, and you really have to stay on top of it.
Yeah.
I think productivity is going to be radically changed. There's some things that AI doesn't, you know, it doesn't do it any faster than we're doing it now. Like, you could probably get some economies of speed with organization in construction projects and things like that. Although a lot of that is personnel based. You know, the fact that we still have some companies are faster than others because they've got their own teams of people. Those teams work well together. They're organized and structured in such a way that they can pull off bigger projects faster because of the experience and what they do. Some teams, they work at the pace they're going to work at. And so, well, it's custom work and we just don't go any faster than that. I think that that's more around sort of culture and choice than it is technology for a lot of that stuff. But some things, you know, I don't know that you want to not, I mean, like, who wants to not have AI for proofreading, for example? You know, that's we use it all the time, yeah. and people don't realize yeah. it. You know, Grammarly on your computer, if you've ever had something tell you, oh, you have a grammar error, you have a spell check, something like that, those are really basic versions of AI that we've had for a long time, and they helped you. And then people became, yeah, I get it. They became reliant on it. We became terrible spellers, and now we write in hieroglyphics again because, you know, nobody wants to learn how to actually use language and punctuation. AI solves a lot of that.
Yeah.
Do you think that it ever starts to eat into the education system where it's like, well, we don't really need as many teachers, or we don't really need teachers because we have this, you know, curriculum that AI's created, and largely it's going to spit stuff out, and the teacher isn't really teaching. It's just they're there for maybe behavior monitoring. And
yeah, I don't
it.
Know about that. I think a lot of what teachers are doing right now, like especially in colleges and stuff, the professors I've talked to, they're still having to do it. They're just having to put up more guardrails around, like, you can't take home a lab report to write it. You have to sit in class and write the lab report. Mm-hmm. They're still needing those critical thinking skills and to know how to do it.
It's funny. But, so I'm going to give a free idea to the education system, by the way. The idea that you could proctor remotely, like you could have a remote proctoring by doing keystroke logging, because keystroke logging would let you know whether or not somebody was actually assembling things, and it would still give away if you used another machine, wrote it on there, and then were trying to translate it, there would be behavior patterns in typing that would be unusual, right? The typing cadence would be odd and would still likely set off that this was unlikely to be composed by a person in real time.
Hmm.
That's how they do the "are you a robot" detection for signing into things. I didn't even realize it, but the whole "are you a robot" is how poorly you click it, because a robot would click it perfectly and a human doesn't. So that's how it knows you're not a robot.
This is sort of my idea is it's really hard. So what you do is you say, well, you have to do it on this machine. This machine, we can monitor what comes in and out of it.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
And
because,
it
like,
logs the keystrokes, and the keystrokes, we're not going to tell you in real time whether or not you've been caught. What we're going to do is we're going to use multiple angles. We're going to look at the timing of it. We're going to look at whether or not you're using it. We don't have to use a camera, right? That's the thing. We just use presence detection, which doesn't actually take an image. It just says, is there a warm body in front of here or not? And with presence detection and keystroke logging, you could not really destroy someone's privacy, but still get enough, I believe, data to determine whether or not a real person was writing this, which would solve the problem. But it doesn't really answer your question, Matt, right? It solves the problem of how do you keep people from cheating with AI? At least it makes it a much harder.
Yeah.
You know, then you have to be really clever to cheat, which is a form of intelligence in and of itself.
I think there is one. I think it's called Parrot, where it's like a hidden thing and it shows up just as a little bar on your thing. And I've seen like videos of people cheating on like interviews and stuff with it. So like the AI is getting just as like good at working around
catching
that. I think
itself.
That'd be a mm-hmm. good idea, but a super hard one to do.
Well, you have to use the machine that's provided, right?
Yeah.
So you have a curated yep. device in order to handle this.
Interesting.
And so that would be the issue. But the teaching issue is, what role does a teacher have? I think we still have to teach discernment, logic, understanding how to read and think and compose thoughts. And those don't happen without going through the motions of doing it.
You know what one of the biggest like elements of being human, I think, is the storytelling side of things, right? Like, it happens in music, it happens in movies, like, you know, we mm-hmm. just pass down these stories. It's a storytelling, you know, experience. That's one of the things that I think AI could really eat into, because it could start to change the narrative, where you keep leaning on AI to generate music. You use it to generate a movie script. And so it's like, I think we could lose the storytelling side, and it yep. could start to manipulate history to where we lose all like common knowledge that was true, and it just becomes whatever AI wants it to be.
It is conceivable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whether or not that is what plays out, I don't know. But it's possible. You know, the interesting thing
I have a
I
negative outlook
is,
on this, don't I?
Well, yeah. The question is whether or not people even resist it.
I
was surprised to learn that the idea of social credit scores, there are many people in China that are actually embracing it. Like, they are trying to hack the system to get a higher score. Mm-hmm. And it's fun for them. It's gamified good behavior.
No.
Well, good behavior according to whom?
You're right? Like, no, I'm going to be off grid on my farm.
Everyone needs
somewhere.
To just watch Black Mirror. There is an episode about that, and it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But
well, I'm not
even though we know
we
it's bad, we just jump on the bandwagon. All you have to do is offer people some free stuff, and they're like, well, okay, whatever you want. Like,
yeah, there's nothing that's really free.
Yeah.
No.
Right? You're always the product. If you're getting something for free, it's because you're the product. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and on that note, as we get to the last segment here, I realize we got to take a break. So.
We promised we were going to wrap this all back, and we will when we get back from this break. We're going to tell you how this matters to your money.
Okay, we'll do that, but we're going to run now. So stick around, everybody. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And I'm Art.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang. Welcome back to the Home Stretch and the True Wealth Show on Cinco de Mayo. Which,
are you celebrating in this year?
I don't know. I really don't. I hope we'll have some form of, you know,
taco eating contest.
Something like that.
Wait.
You know what? We're going to do this.
I'm doing it. Yeah, we got to loop Justin in. We know we can beat him.
Yes,
Justin. So we'll both feel like a little victorious.
He'll be fine. He'll look at this and be like, "No, I'm not doing that. That's stupid." So he'll probably eat a taco just because tacos. But like beyond that, does Justin eat?
No.
Yeah, it's really wild.
Yeah, I think he eats one meal a day.
He's like, food is fuel.
Mm. Yep.
He's Rennie's
dad. But if
dad.
You only eat one meal a day, are you even getting fuel, or is your body just starving the whole time? And it's like, I'm dying all the time. And
you're not going to have the conversation about metabolic flexibility right now.
Okay. What are we going to have the conversation about?
Whatever's in your head that's not metabolic flexibility.
Well,
whole show has been driven by Matt. I was going to do the show on like how to hack things into being more affordable because the world's broken. Matt was like, let's talk about quantum computing. I'm like, all right, let's
GameStop.
Do that. GameStop. Yeah.
We talked about that.
We did.
And then we talked about, what was the last part? We just did it. Remind me.
I feel like social credit scores got in there somehow.
Yeah, that slipped in there. So I think we can loop it all back to this, though. So as assets reprice, right, we've got eBay possibly being acquired. Mm-hmm. We have quantum
computing. How about Intel? That was one. Same story, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, the government bought Intel, and look what happened to it.
Mm-hmm. So as all these assets just go wild and the stock market is hitting all-time highs, imagine being the person that was in 100% cash for the last 3 years. Or, spread it out, say 5 or 6 years ago. prices on things have basically doubled. You sat on your $30,000 of cash, and now your $30,000 basically buys $15,000 worth of goods.
Mm-hmm.
So that hurts, right? And so I guess the message to the investors is, in an era where, you know, we had the internet completely change things in the 90s, here we are having AI completely change things today, right now. The question to them is, how are you invested to make sure that you don't start falling behind as the world starts changing?
So my question is, for everybody that's out there saying that I'm really conservative, and so that's why I buy things like CDs. What's that? What is the opportunity cost associated with air quoting conservative as an investor? Because what I will actually suggest is, you're not an investor at all.
No, I don't think you are. And you know, my opinion on that has actually changed a lot in the last, I don't know, 2 years, because I used to think, you know, totally fine as a long-term strategy, even as long as it makes, you know, everything kind of okay. But the problem is, I feel like everything's hyperinflating at a rate that might continue. Because look at the national debt, right? Like, we are falling so far behind every single day. And we just keep printing more money, and we keep trying to remanufacture things to limp it along. And if you're not holding assets that are keeping up, like, someone showed a chart the other day that even if you had bought the index, you had the S&P 500, and you compare that to, like, real inflationary numbers, you're almost break even. Like, the S&P versus, like, how people are really feeling inflation. I don't know if it's true or not, but...
Yeah, I don't know that that's true that way. You know, the government is going to kind of manage the statistics along the way. But in real terms, we look at how expensive things are. And I don't want to use gas as the indicator right now, but houses are a fair one. You know, I look at over the last... Since 2019, pre-COVID to now. And, you know... So it's been about 7 years. Why are houses twice as expensive?
Yeah.
Right, because you're like, are people getting paid twice as much?
Yeah. Well, that means that houses are appreciating on average approximately 12% per year compounded. That's the same as the stock market.
Yeah.
Right? But the difference is, a house doesn't produce anything. It's not creating new value. It's just sitting there being a house. But the currency dilution and the inflation, as a, you know, has driven nearly a doubling in price across the board. Now, it does cap out. The higher end properties aren't doubling. Right? And that does make sense, because there's just not enough buyers. But we can see, and if you look as a percentage of income for people that are buying the median price house, like, what's the percentage of their income that they have to apply toward housing right now? We're on an unsustainable pathway. I don't see a pathway forward where politicians make tough decisions. I see a pathway where, in fact, because I think there's a lot of politicians that they're the people that we get to do the job, not the people that are the best and the brightest. And so what we get is people that just sort of do whatever's convenient, or whatever gets them reelected, or whatever their party says, or whatever a union says, or whatever some constituency says to them.
Do you think it's because the problem is actually unsolvable at this point, where we're so, like, the debt has grown to such an extreme that it's like, we know we're not going to actually ever solve this. We can't do it in 4 years of being elected. So why even try?
Well, they just gave up. I think that's what happens, but it's not because the problem's unsolvable. I think because there's no downside to the right now for not solving it.
Yeah.
You know, if we turn around and said, okay, if inflation exceeds this number, or if, you know, the debt exceeds this number, everybody is ineligible for reelection, they'd solve the problem.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right? They'd solve the problem. It may be austerity. It may be a draconian. But that problem goes away. But there's no adverse consequence to it, right? We'll just print more. And if we know DC's out of touch, right? When the economy's in the toilet, they're still drinking their $200 bottles of wine and, you know, having their fancy meals and everything. And lobbyists are still out there throwing the money around to peddle the influence. Like, that culture is completely disconnected from the rest of the country. So, and I don't see that changing. That, and, you know, this isn't even a rant about partisanship, right? That's both sides of the aisle.
Oh, yeah.
Right? They're all doing the same stuff like this. And does that mean nobody's out there trying to do good? No, it doesn't. And it doesn't even mean the majority of them aren't trying to do good. It means it's too difficult to solve it. And what we get is compromise that doesn't move the needle enough. And so it just keeps getting worse. It'll happen. I mean, it's not sustainable.
No.
But it'll, we will. I mean, I can't make predictions like this, but I would say probabilistically speaking, it's highly likely that we will see significant currency printing.
Yeah, because they're forced to, basically. Yeah. If they don't change their behavior, which they're not. So here we go.
I don't see a path around. You know, we have to be able to pay back this extravagant debt with less valuable money for the government to remain solvent. It's that, or we have to become more imperial. We have to start taking countries because you have to, at the point of a gun, tell them, you all accept this currency, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. That was a delightful end to this show.
Well, brighten up our listeners if they are depressed right now.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys. I feel so great over here.
If they want to end this thing with a happy taco, what do they do?
All right. The good news is this. You get to control your own behaviors.
That's true.
And there are still ways to navigate this gauntlet by sort of outsmarting the system. Mm-hmm. But you know, that doesn't mean doing what everybody else is doing right now. It means doing something different. So that's where getting professional help from folks that are knowledgeable can really make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So here's our subtle pitch. Matt, how do they reach us?
Yep. Little John Financial. That's the name. And the phone number is 541-375-0898. You can call it. You can text it. You can go to the website. You can chat us. But don't just do nothing, because then that's going to suck.
All right. Technical term. Well, we're out of time, so I guess we better run. But until next time, I'm Dave Littlejohn.
Matt Dixon.
I'm Arndt.
And you've been listening to True Wealth. Thanks for tuning in.